about the sin of Achan. The sin of Achan, he said to Joshua. What makes the sin of Achan different? Stand out. Why are we discussing the sin of Achan? So, let's start from this angle. Anyone remember what mechanism, what apparatus Am Yisrael used to identify who the sinner was?
Goral.
A goral, right? So they had successive gorals. Let's first see which Shevet, and then which Mishpacha, and then which Beisav. Then the goral fell on Achan ben Zabdi, ben Kami ben Zabdi ben Zerach, Lamata Yehuda. What does this mean to you? Why did they use a goral to bring the Kaddish Baruch Hu, just shine a light, a little spotlight, or send a nevuah? Why this whole song and dance of a goral? What does it feel like? What else were they using the goral for in Sefer Yeshua? To divide the land. It's for the Nachla, the Agaral, Techalek, Nachla Zel. So why is the same apparatus to allocate land in Eretz Yisrael? Why is the same apparatus employed to discover, identify the sinner? The answer is because his sin is endangering the Nachla. And that's why they lost that eye. And as Yeshua is concerned, if we lost the victory, we lost the military battle at Ai, then the people of Canaan will be emboldened and maybe they'll defeat us, as opposed to being frightened, as Rachab had reported. So his sin was impacting the national future, the national situation. And why this is important is because now they're in Eretz Yisrael. Now that they're in Eretz Yisrael, individual sins aren't just localized in the individual experience, but they're going to have ripple effect for a people. Is heightened. I can't say it begins in Eretz Yisrael. It begins in Eretz Yisrael. Before they entered Eretz Yisrael, they were individuals in the Midbar. Once we enter Eretz Yisrael, there's a halacha of Chai Yisrael Arevim Zelizah, even in Chutz Laretz. But the experience of Arvus, this is the epicenter of the Jewish people. What happens in Eretz Yisrael affects, protects. That's why the decisions we make in Israel today aren't just taken based on the Jews that live in Israel. We feel responsible for Jews across the world. And whether terror attacks, Chas V'Shalom, or issues facing Jewish communities, financial issues facing Jewish communities across the world, we feel it here in Israel. Our politics has to take that into account. Our fund allocation has to take into account. This is where Am Yisrael is building its future, and the future of Am Yisrael includes every single Jew alive across this entire earth. So they're finally entering Eretz Yisrael, and unlike Korach, if you look at the language is very un-Korachy. In Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu davens Hashem, Ish Echad Yechata, Yakol Eidet himself. When Yoshua gives his summary in the end, not when Achan happens, but in Perichah Beis, when he's about to die, and he relives the trauma of Achan, he says, Hello, Achan ben Zerach Mo'al Ma'al Vacherem, Ve'al Kol Adas Yisrael HaYaketzef, V'hu Ish Echad Lo Gavah Ba'avono. So it's the exact opposite of Korach. In the Midbar, Ish Echad Yechata, Ve'al Kol Eidet himself. Now that it's in Eretz Yisrael, Hayaketzef, I'll call Yisrael, who Hayachad. It's the exact opposite. So Hashem is delivering a message to Am Yisrael that now that you're in Eretz Yisrael, things are a little bit different. Sins aren't limited only to the person who sins. They're going to affect the entire people, the entire arc of history, the possibility of defeating Ai and other nations, and the ability to settle the land. So that's why the Goral is used to deliver this message. Chazal tell us, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, this wasn't the first time that Achan took from the Cherem. Achan evidently took from Cherem in the Mochamos and Parshas Chukas. But again, those could be overlooked. But now that you're in Eretz Yisrael, the stakes are higher. And why am I saying this? This year, Meretz Hashem, I'd like your tefillah to have a different tonality. You're now in Eretz Yisrael, you're davening, maybe you're the first person or one of the first people in your family in history to daven Yom Ha'arayim in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know how many of your parents and grandparents have had this chutzpah to be in Eretz Yisrael. And now that you're davening in Eretz Yisrael, 10 miles away from Yerushalayim, a couple of miles away from Kevar Rachel, hop skipping a jump away from Naaretz Machpelah, hopefully your davening won't just be about me and my needs and my failures and my hopes and my futures, but you can expand and amplify your tefillos and daven for Am Yisrael and daven for all the Jews who just don't know how to daven in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So many Jews who don't make it into shul for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, or do make it into shul for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and their davening is a little bit shallow or light. And they don't understand the enormity of the day. Daven for the needs of Am Yisrael. Daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring our Geula in a way that isn't painful, but that is quick and redemptive and electric. So there's so much to daven for and to cast your own experience in more of a national and historical setting. It's not just HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is my record, this is my future, these are my hopes. please be favorable to me. But Kodesh Baruch Hu, I feel as if my life is shifting into a different gear. I feel as if my life is shifting from the individual, from the private, to more of a collective and historical sense. Those of you who saw the movie and went through the teal the other day. So there's a tone for tefillah and a tone for kapara. And sometimes you can achieve kapara. I'll talk about this as the time goes on when we get to Rabbi Soloveitchik's definitions of tshuva. You can achieve kapara even if you don't deserve kapara. If you just belong to the tzibur, and the tzibur gets automatic built-in kapara because the Kodesh Baruch Hu promised us identification and affiliation with Am Yisrael, maybe a route towards achieving kapara that can circumvent personal absolution and personal penitence. I'm part of Am Yisrael, Salachti Kidvarecha, you promised me a Kodesh Baruch Hu tshuva, and now that I'm part of Am Yisrael, I want to be part of that collective experience of tshuva. So I want you to think, and I'll talk about this a lot during the month, of a collectivist voice in tshuva, of a national tone of tshuva, of a historic element of tshuva, not just one individual standing in a small shul or synagogue in some community somewhere, standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu with his chatoim and his chuyos being judged by Hashem, but try to change the framework and change the setting. And that's what Am Yisrael has to learn when Achan sins. The sin of Achan is meant to capture or crystallize that shift. It's no longer the Korach world where one person sins and his punishment is limited to him. Now the effects are going to ripple outwards. What you also see with Achan is that, and Chazal talked about this in the Aron Sanhedrin Mem Gimel, is his vidur is very straightforward. There's no conditions. He doesn't try to justify. Sometimes people, public officials, when they commit crimes and they issue apologies, you wonder how sincere the apologies are. Is the apology just another way to build their ego and to build their public profile? Oh, he's did a great apology. Everyone likes a redemption story. But one of the differences between a sincere apology and an incomplete apology, and you have to know in life how to apologize. It's an art in life, and the better you are at apologizing, the better your relationships will be. The first rule of apologies is there should be absolutely, positively, no conditions. Anytime an apology has the word but, you know that it's an insincere apology. Now, there may be buts. There may be reasons that contributed to your failure, to the reason you insulted someone, but the person receiving the apology isn't interested in the buts, because the buts take the air out of the apology. The buts shift the blame. You know, I apologize, but you said this to me, or you did this. All of a sudden, now I'm putting you into the accused chair, rather than just accepting the brunt and the full force of my blame and my guilt, even though it may not be true. Apologies don't have to reflect the truth. Apologies are not about who was wrong. Apologies are about mending relationships and repairing hurt. So even if in theory, if we just crunch the facts, you're only 60% wrong and the other person's 40% wrong, or other factors contributing, even if it's not that person, once you introduce that qualification, the apology loses its force and its impact. So apologies should just be, I'm sorry I did this, I'm sorry this happened, nothing else, not shifting, not deflecting, not redirecting. And you see that with Achan's apology. Amna anochi chatasi l'Hashem elokei Yisrael v'kazels asisi. He accepts the blame, he describes what he took, and he directs Moshe that they're buried in his ohel. What's fascinating is he never does tshuva. He never performs any tshuva, which could be why he's stoned and he's executed. But you see the power of vidui even without tshuva. This is not the perfect tshuva, but at least there's a vidui, and Tanakh recurs a vidui for people to accept their guilt. And vidui is the first step for tshuva. And even if you're not able to translate vidui into a sincere and heartfelt tshuva, there's still power in getting the sin out there and acknowledging guilt. Okay, so tomorrow we will move forward from Sefer Yoshua, Mirz Hashem, to Sefer Shmuel Beis, and we'll talk a little bit about David's Chayt. That's obviously not just a momentous and an epic Chayt, but it's also a Chayt that leads to the drafting of Sefer Tehillim, which is the greatest Shuba book ever written. Okay? Have a great day, everyone.